Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I kind of think Mother Earth wants less toxics and more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics are playing in our daily lives. Things like mercury, PFAS, and pesticides. And we always wonder what Mother Earth wants while we're at it. My guests today are two best friends, Aisha Khan and Jamie Hankawa. They met at Boston University and then worked in consumer relations and marketing. And young life was going smoothly, but when Aisha's husband found out he had testicular cancer, they fell into the vast and unsettling awareness that firefighters are contracting really rare cancers at alarming rates. They responded with a deep dive into the research. Now they are citizen activists, having formed the Nantucket PFAS Action Group. That comes with a fabulous website connecting visitors to a remarkable set of resources, films, water tests, research, and lots more. And today they're here to talk about what PFAS exposure means to individuals and the obstacles they face in raising awareness about the whole PFAS contamination subject. Thanks for coming on What Mama Wants today, Aisha and Jamie.
Hey, thank you for having us.
So let's start with your door into the world of PFAS. That's fire service. Aisha, there are 1.2 million fire service people in the country, but the one you loved got sick, likely from workplace exposures to PFAS chemicals. You recognized that firefighters need to know more about what's in their gear. So you got study going. I wonder if you could tell us about that study.
Yes, and thank you again for inviting us. It's a real privilege to be here. So let me start back. So in late 2019, my husband, Nate Barber, a 38-year-old father of two young boys and the captain at Nantucket Fire Department, was diagnosed with testicular cancer that is linked to PFAS exposure in the fire service. Now, at the time, my husband had been in the fire service for 15 years, and no one in his department, really no one on our island, had ever heard of PFAS. And unfortunately, this is where our journey began. We had found out that PFAS were in Class B aqueous film-forming foam, which is also referred to as AFFF, or the firefighting foam, as well as in the firefighting gear. So as we looked more into it, there were several studies that were done, one in Australia, one in Florida, which had found that PFAS levels were significantly higher in firefighters' blood compared to the general population. Then there was also a really interesting study in San Francisco that found that PFAS levels were higher in firefighters' blood compared to office workers' blood. So we started to see the PFAS awareness, you know, pick up, but specifically to AFFF. We didn't feel like that many people were talking about the PFAS in the gear, which is unfortunately what many of the firefighters are still putting on every time they go on a call. And honestly, had it not been for the efforts put forth by the Cotters, Neil McMillan, Jason Burns, Ed Kelly, and the study that was done by Dr. Graham Peasley, we also would not have known that there was any concern in our firefighter turnout gear. So as we started to see this, we partnered up with a brilliant researcher, Dr. Courtney Kerrigan, and asked if she would be open to being our scientific lead in a community grant. And that grant was from UMass Lowell. It's their Toxics Use Reduction Institute, or TURI. And that's the grant we applied for. We partnered with our Nantucket Firefighter Department, as well as the Fall River Firefighting Department, to learn more about this PFAS in the firefighting gear. And what was really unique about this grant, this TURI grant, was it was a community grant. So the focus was really on us. We were in charge of what we wanted, and we made sure that we addressed what the firefighters' concerns were. So this study really was by the firefighters, for the firefighters. And it engaged the firefighters in the conversation about how they can reduce their occupational exposures. What we saw also was that engaging them at this level had a significant impact as far as changing their policy within their firehouses and implementing safe handling practices. So a long way of answering your question. The short-term impacts of the project was, you know, to helping educate the firefighters with the potential occupational PFAS exposures. And then our long-term goal of the project was to help reduce PFAS exposures among the firefighters, their families, and ultimately their communities. And what we saw was the firefighters, the information, what they wanted was something they could easily understand from a trustworthy source where there are no conflicts of interest. They wanted to know what was coming off their older gear, their current gear, their new low PFAS gear. So being involved in this project was really moving experience for us. And it showed us a really important lesson. What it showed us was when people unite in an organized manner, regardless of their background, if they just all come together in a really organized way, we actually can bring change and we can be extremely powerful. So that felt really good to be a part of that because we are just regular people who wanted some answers. So we decided to take these matters into our own hands. And truly none of this could have come to fruition without our partnerships with very patient researchers like Dr. Courtney Kerrigan, Dr. Graham Peasley, Dr. Heather Stapleton, and along with the staff at Turie, and the support that we got from nonprofits like Last Call Foundation, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility.
It's amazing how many people go to work and do really important things to protect us every day, and we don't even know who they are. We don't think of them. They're not on the news. And thank you for highlighting some of those people and the powerful work they've done at the pinnacles of their careers. We citizens can't really protect ourselves all by ourselves, not really as workers, not as mothers, not as home cooks. We need government regulations to stop the use of harmful chemicals before they enter the environment, our homes, and our bodies. Jamie, at the recent PFAS conference in North Carolina, what was the sense of how we can stop the tap on these forever chemicals that are streaming into our daily lives?
Hi, Kate. Yeah. Thank you again so much for having us on today. First, I just wanted to say that the PFAS conference in North Carolina was like no other conference I've been to. It was a brilliant mix of policymakers, scientists, researchers, lawyers, advocates like us, students and press coming together to learn and share about PFAS. The energy there was just like unreal. But to answer your question, the big message that I took away was that we all need to work together to turn off the PFAS tap. Because this issue is so pervasive, it really is going to require and does require a multi-sectoral approach. It can't just be one sector who is going to solve all of this alone. And unfortunately, with toxic chemicals, our regulatory systems have really failed to reduce the risk, and they keep placing the importance of short-term, short-sighted industry profits over long-term public health and environmental impacts. At the core, it's really just a handful of companies that produce these chemicals, and they knew about the persistent nature, they knew about human exposures, and the potential toxicity since like the 1970s, right? But they continue to carry on business as usual to this day. And the longer we wait to reduce the production and the use of PFAS, quite honestly, the more expensive it's going to be to remediate and clean up all of this pollution, which is going to materialize in increased utility bills. And another area that I don't know that a lot of people really think about, but this is going to cost a ton of money in healthcare over time. And all of this ultimately falls on the shoulders of taxpayers, especially, you know, in our current broken regulatory system that shifts the burden of these costs from the polluters to regular people. And just to put it into perspective, we're not talking about just like millions of dollars. We're talking about billions of dollars. We just heard that out here in Orange County, California, they estimated that it's going to take at least $1 billion of taxpayer money to lower PFAS in the drinking water just to meet California's drinking water recommendations. These are not even like regulations yet. And that's not even removing PFAS entirely or factoring in like healthcare or property values or other external impacts. It's just infrastructure. And that's just in one single county. You know, we really just all need to come together to address PFAS through legislation, more protective chemical regulations with lawsuits, community activism. Manufacturers need to get on board and stop using PFAS in their products. We need to stop cycling PFAS into the environment through biosolids and landfill leachate. We need researchers to continue to push to find remediation solutions. And ultimately, we really need to hold PFAS polluters accountable for what I believe are crimes against humanity. And, you know, that may sound harsh, but 100 years from now, I feel like the future civilization is going to look back and they're going to be like, what were they thinking? Right? Like the chemical pollution that we're seeing now is absolutely criminal and no one is being held accountable for any of it. So, yes, we need to turn off the PFAS tap, and we know we'll get there by pushing for more awareness, for more education, for more transparency, and most of all, accountability. I mean, if you take Maine as an example, you guys are leading the charge here. We're looking at your legislation as an amazing example of how to push a protective ban on PFAS. So I think there are things that we can do.
Yeah. I'm just struck when you say that about how easy it is to break something and how difficult it is to make something or fix something once it's been broken. And really, Turi and other organizations that are helping people learn how to use something different so we are not pumping toxic PFAS out in the world that our grandchildren and great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren, if we're lucky enough, should be cleaning up for us.
Yeah, you know, Jamie says it. I think we all just thought it was being done. I think we just thought it was being handled.
Oh, for sure. I think almost everybody thinks the FDA is out there or, yeah not so much. These chemical companies have a huge advantage, though. They're able to hire genius marketing strategists to cover up and spin the havoc they're wreaking. It's a complete David and Goliath story. Where do other citizen activists sign up to become involved in this movement? Do you know of other coalitions?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and it's so true. So often, myself included, we are victims of really savvy advertising. I mean, it works. And just look at our history. Big tobacco, big oil, big pharma, big agriculture. This isn't the first time an industry has spun their marketing to gain profit, unfortunately, at the expense of environmental and human health. What we're seeing with PFAS is that it's an extremely effective chemical, extremely effective. And unfortunately, the downside is that it takes, you know, millennia to break down. And because they are persistent, they have the potential to build up in our environment and then ultimately build up in us, in our bodies. And again, going back to our beliefs and what we think, we truly believe that everything, or I used to believe that everything that we buy on the shelf is safe, and that these companies have gone through the great lengths to run tests and, you know, studies and ensure their safety. And we believe that we have these protective legislatures that have put these policies in place. So I think the best thing that we can do to combat all this marketing and all these advertising is to equip ourselves with knowledge and really harness the power of media. And so that's why podcasts like this help get information out there. So it's so important. So again, thank you for doing this and putting attention on this topic. You know, people get their information from all different sources. So the more we can get the information and the awareness out to people, they can start asking these important questions of why are we here and why are we asking for this change? So going back to Jamie and I, we're not advocates. We had a very base level understanding of how our government works. But what we've learned is that each one of us can play a role. And each one of us can contribute something. And, you know, understanding what you can contribute is really important. Is it time? Is it taking action? Is it donations? We can all play a role, and it doesn't have to be in this predefined way. What is important is knowing that we all have an impact, big or small. Everything helps. So it can be significant, like joining the National PFAS Contamination Coalition, or it can be something as simple as, you know, recommending Rob Bellot's book, Exposure, to your next book club. Really pick and choose. It's all helpful. And the PFAS movement has gained a lot of momentum. And it's because everyday people like us are coming together, being one voice in addressing this issue, again, in this very nice, organized manner. So if anyone listening is interested in getting involved in the coalition, they can head to PFASproject.net. And that's where they can also find a lot of great resources and information, you know, to further educate themselves on this.
And if they wanted to talk to you about how to start a local organization, can you direct them to your website?
It's PFASActionGroup.com.
Yeah, they can just email us too. Yeah, we're always happy to talk to anybody about PFAS. Our friends really would appreciate someone else hearing about it other than
Hey, if you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guests today are Jamie Hankawa and Aisha Khan, who started Nantucket PFAS Action Group together. If you are ready to dive into information about PFAS, I'd say start at their remarkable website, PFASActionGroup.com. However, we have noticed that some people really don't want to hear about this topic. They really don't want to know about the PFAS in their Teflon-coated pans. What is going on there, do you think, Jamie? Is it kind of like the Wizard of Oz, but people just don't want to know about the regulatory bodies that aren't looking out for us?
That's a great question. I have personally participated in for many years. I've been an ostrich to all of this myself, all of this exposure, stating that our regulatory agencies are doing their jobs in a precautionary way, that we are protected, that everything on the shelf has been rigorously tested. And it's embarrassing to say, but I'm naive to it all, right? And opening your eyes to the reality of what is actually happening can be jarring, and it can be wildly uncomfortable. So I completely get why when I talk about PFAS and go down that rabbit hole, friends and family, their eyes just like kind of glaze over at some point, and we end up talking about something else, like movies. it always happens. But to me, it makes sense, because coming to terms with how depressingly disappointing, you know, by coming to the realization of really how much power corporations have in this country, and that people at the top of those corporations and companies knew that these chemicals and chemicals have harmful effects that can span generations. And that the people in these regulatory agencies that we really protect us have completely failed us. I mean, that's a lot to process and then like try to carry on with like a normal life, right?
Yeah, I think there's almost a psychic piece, like God, where you think somebody is looking out for you at some level. Yeah. You need to know you're not alone. And so when you find out no one's got your back, it is a horrifying feeling. It's like that feeling of being alone, you know, that thing you're going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it is way easier to believe a comforting lie than it is to acknowledge and accept an inconvenient truth. But in our work and what we've seen, I'm personally really hopeful that more and more people, as more information gets out there, that more and more people are going to open their eyes and their ears to the realities of what's happening, and hopefully use their voice and their purchase power, because this is often about money, to push change forward. You know, like a really simple thing, like we didn't even know that making a phone call to our legislators could actually make a difference. Like, we didn't understand that their job is to listen to us and that the democratic process doesn't end at the ballot box. It's not just about
a vote. We thought we were engaged and we had never called or anyone.
Right.
And none of our friends understood that either. It really was very eye-opening, and perhaps that's embarrassing on our part, but
I mean, yeah.
Don't blame yourself. Where was your civics class?
Yeah, where were the general population? I think we did not understand how this works. That
you're the general college educated
yes,
population. Yeah. You know, that not everybody gets exposed to how the government works. Clearly.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't realize that, like, you really do have to connect with your politicians, right? These are the people who are going to put forward legislation and push for protective measures to be put in place and tell them what's important to you, right? And to really tell them, and not always with like a form letter or a sign on, or like just to call them.
Yeah. And you're actually, you're giving them an opportunity to be a hero. Yeah.
And they want to hear. That was what was surprising. They act, I did not know we can just call them and email them and tell them our wants and desires. I mean, in an appropriate way, and you know, but it was amazing. So it's been a big learning lesson.
Yeah. Especially with PFAS, right? Like, this is an emerging topic, and it would be in their best interest. I hope you're listening, politicians. It's in your best interest to get on board and be proactive and be protective for your constituents. And, you know, the same goes for brands. You know, you can email them, you can call them, you can tell them, go PFAS free, you know, go fluorine free. We don't want this in our products. And it's all going to take time, but I think that ultimately we can use our voices more effectively. And I think that this PFAS movement is a perfect opportunity to start speaking truth to power.
It's kind of fun, too.
Yeah, it's very fun.
When it comes to PFAS related to fire service personnel, what do you think Mother Earth wants to do about this forever chemical problem, Aisha?
Oh, sure. I mean, she's probably has such a long list of things she wants us to do. So I think ultimately, she probably wants us to stop making chemicals that last millennia, that will take thousands upon thousands of years to break down. I think she wants us to stop making and using chemicals that will outlast all of us here, that will just continue to accumulate in the environment. And so what does that mean? Each year, we just have more and more of these chemicals in our environment, and then ultimately in our bodies and the bodies of, you know, future generations to come. And a way to do that, because it sounds all overwhelming and it's like, well, what do we do? Well, maybe a way to approach that is really using a phase out approach, and something very similar to what was done in the Montreal Protocol. And what that did was it addressed the substances that depleted the ozone layer. So it was like a phase out process and what you could follow. And so we need to follow that phase out of all non-essential uses of PFAS and use innovation to work towards finding safer alternatives. And within the fire service, it highlights that with AFFF and with the gear. A few years ago, both of these were categorized as essential use means. Now, based on the growing concerns and voices of everyday people, industries are beginning to innovate and create safer alternatives, nullifying that essential use claim for PFAS in the fire service. Now, there's still a lot of work and awareness to be done to fully remove PFAS from the fire service, but it's also a step, and it's a good step in the right direction. So essentially, what she probably wants is for all of us to turn off the PFAS tap and regulate these PFAS chemicals as a class in the fire service and just in general.
Mama would rejoice. So to close this interview, I'd like to ask you both a couple quick questions about your personal relationship with the earth.
Sure,
at your game.
Sure, sure.
As a kid, what was your favorite thing to do outside in nature?
So So I was an indoor kid, but I grew up really close to the ocean in LA. So I loved going there with my friends, you know, just to like relax and hang out and swim. But I also really have some amazing memories with my grandfather teaching me how to fish in the lakes and rivers outside of Seattle. We'd spend our summers up there and with my grandparents like every year, and we'd pick blackberries and like go fishing and hang out in the forest, which was really novel coming from Los Angeles.
Oh, that's so dear. Describe a scene in nature when you have felt awe, Aisha.
Sure. Storms. They always leave me in awe. Living, you know, living on an island, Nantucket, 30 miles out to sea, it's hard not to not only respect, but be slightly fearful of, you know, heavy winds, high seas, and the what accompany a storm. It really can disrupt our island, wreak havoc on it. So it just it's a reminder of how powerful nature is and how we're at the mercy of it all. And it's quite humbling.
So, Jamie, what's one thing your mother taught you about Mother Earth?
Well, so I grew up in Los Angeles in the 80s and 90s, where consumer culture was kind of all the rage. And honestly, the biggest talk of Mother Earth was when we made the transition from paper bags to plastic bags so that we could save the trees. I don't know if you guys remember that, but back then it was like all about saving the rainforest, saving the whales, ozone depletion, and beach cleanups in Los Angeles. That's like what we were focused on. But it actually felt really removed. Like we could still just do anything that we wanted without repercussion. But my mom definitely instilled a respect for others and for rules into us kids, which ultimately was reflected in how we also engaged with our environment. So, you know, don't litter, pick up after yourself, stay on the path, don't disturb the animals. But I don't really remember the sense of urgency or the breadth of issues that we're seeing today.
Well, thanks, Mom. What's one thing in nature that you wonder about these days, Aisha?
Well, you know, I think I just see how interconnected everything is. So I always wonder what trickling effects our actions today are having on the future. I know we're going to leave an impact. I know we're going to, you know, have an impact. So I always wonder what our actions are doing for the future.
And then each of you, quick and easy one, what's your favorite baby animal?
I mean, everything baby, everything human, animals. I think babies are just the cutest. They're the best. I mean, maybe baby bunnies, I guess. I mean, yeah, baby bunnies. Those are cute.
I definitely have a favorite, baby sea otters. Hands down. Kidding me? They're the cutest. And they also hold hands when they sleep. I mean.
Yes. I was just going to say, yeah, Jamie's told me that
it's like,
before.
Do
you know about the pockets under their arms?
No. Oh, like
they have pockets and they can take their favorite rock and they can put it in there and they use the same rock their whole life if they have a really good one.
See?
And their moms, when they're babies, they go and blow up their underarm pockets so they can float while moms go get them snacks.
Exactly why. That's exactly why, right? Like snacks, built-in pockets, holding hands while you sleep. I mean, it's like a dream.
And they live in communities.
Kelp forests. It's like, they're like my dream. I love them so much.
They're very cute. So are bunnies. Aisha and Jamie, thank you. You are two powerful, dynamic, informed, and savvy women who are working to protect firefighters and citizens alike. I am so impressed by all you've created together in friendship. You're not alone in this kind of lonely battle. And I think that is a beacon for me. You know, find other people who you can share this heaviness with so that it doesn't weigh you down too much. Thank you for the work you're doing and for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for this opportunity. And, you know, yes, I hope none of us feel that we're alone in any of this. It truly, at the end of the day, I think what keeps Jamie and I going are people are good. People in general are good people. And it's more of just making sure that they have the right information available to make those right choices. And if we can get that information out to them, I think everyone will, at the end, want to do the right thing. So thank you for inviting us as guests. Thank you
so much, Kate. This has been great.
Super pleasure. Come back again someday.